Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The girls are back in town. Yes, you can see Lucy and Jenny live when they bring a very special quiz night along with an edition of Fingers on Buzzers to the Clapham Grand on Monday, the 26th of October, 2020. There'll be quizzes, there'll be prizes. There's going to be a special guest, which will be announced shortly. Tickets are sold in groups of two and over. But if you're somebody that prefers to go to these things alone, then just drop us a line at fingersbuzzers@gmail.com and we'll partner you up with somebody to buy tickets with. In the meantime, you can go to claphamgrand.com for all information and tickets.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of
Fingers on Buzzers.
Oh, I like the minute you worked in the joint. It was sort of like that, wasn't it?
I was going for a bit more Bring Out Your Dead, but there you go.
Well, I thought it was quite showbiz. It goes to show what I know, doesn't it? But thank you so much, guys, for tuning in again. And we've got an absolute treat of a show for you.
We have. We've got everything. We've got the gamut of emotions in this show for you. We've got guests. We've got happy quiz. We've got sad quiz.
We've got frankly disturbing quiz, Jen.
Disturbing, yes. Yeah. So maybe try not to be consuming or digesting anything important while you're listening to this.
And maybe don't listen last thing at night either, I would say. I don't want to throw you forward too much to what's coming, but it's...
Don't have nightmares.
A little bit spooky.
Well. Yeah.
So let's crack on with this spooky, stomach-churning show. Now, on the line, we have someone I'm very excited to talk to. It is a gentleman called Jonathan Hopper.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're very excited. So we have, obviously, all of us been doing quizzes in lockdown. It's been an absolute feature of 2020 that we wouldn't have expected. But I hear, Jonathan, that you have taken Zoom quizzing to a very different level. Tell us about that.
I hope so. Four of us, four friends who we were in the same pub quiz team together back in the good old days when you could, you know, leave your house and stuff. So we miss that so much. We set up a Zoom quiz. Format is we have 5 questions each. Each person comes up with their own five questions on a variety of things. I like to do mine thematically. So I've done a theme on Name That Crisp, where I described 5 flavours of Walker's crisps and people had to get the crisp flavour, and also the packet for bonus points. I've done a dancey round where I'd just the top half of me would perform a little dance for everybody, and they'd have to get which dance I was trying to do really badly. But yeah, I think the thing that kind of sets it apart from all the other Zoom quizzes I've been involved in is one of their members is called Statistician Paul, which is not very easy to say. He came up with his own scoring system so that when you're answering the questions that someone else has set, it's called points normally, just get a point for each correct answer. When you're actually asking the questions, if you set the question wrong so nobody at all gets it, you lose a point. If everybody gets it right, you just stay where you are, don't gain anything. If some people get it right but not everybody gets it right, then you gain a point. The aim of that is, you know, to try and get questions which it's not just somebody googly impossible stuff or using some really kind of niche knowledge that no one else is going to know, so they get an advantage. So we found it works really well. We get really close quizzing.
I mean, I love this, Jonathan. I absolutely love it, but I'm sort of trying to work out how fair or unfair, or basically you've just blown my mind. Jenny, can you give us your verdict on, I mean, it seems like such a good idea to test the standard of question, really.
Yeah, I think this is playing into a lot of what I've been saying throughout lockdown, is everyone thinks it's easy to write a quiz and to run a quiz, but it's a huge skill set. So this is making sure that the questions are just on that line of challenging, but not impossible for the sake of impossible. You want those questions that making people scratch their heads and work out the answer. And when they've got it, they know it's definitely right and they've figured it out. And if you've just not spotted the clue in there, then, you know, 80% of the teams are scratching their head. The 20% are absolutely loving it. So it's more a test for the quiz master than the quizzers. And I think it's a great way of working around the limitations of setting a quiz.
Yeah.
And especially in the Zoom thing, you want to encourage participation, discourage Googling, and make people. It is a craft, so. I'm guessing that you're all slaving over your questions all week long before the competition itself and trying to work out the best, your best 5 questions to tax people, but not tax them too much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a real balance to it as well. And because we know each other so well as well, you can kind of pitch a question so you think one or two of us may well get it. The other one might be, you know, if pop music or whatever isn't, or classical isn't their thing, then they may well be struggling. But in general, it's a really good tool for, like you say, just kind of pitching it just right, not asking.
I think it's great because it's a workaround and people are having to think so creatively. And I've never heard of this scoring system before. So well done, Statistician Paul, for coming up with something so unique.
I suspect that some of our listeners may well be adopting this in Zoom quizzes in the future. So he should work out some kind of copyright or intellectual property claim on it. But it's such a great idea. It's, you know, it's the thing we need. If we do go into lockdown again, it will be slightly kind of softened for me by the fact that I can now say, right, the Zoom quizzes are going to have an extra element. I mean, you know, we've said, obviously, it kind of, you're trying to discourage Googling. Do you have any, I mean, obviously, you know each other, so you know you wouldn't cheat, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've also, me and my flatmate do it, and the other two are a couple who live really close by, but, you know, we couldn't see each other for quite a while. So because it's two and two, kind of, you can't get away with it because you set by nips.
You keep each other honest, basically.
Exactly. We keep each other honest. Yeah. Very much.
Something that is also burning within me is the crisps round sounds unbelievably good. In what way did you describe the crisp flavour? I just can't quite imagine how that works.
It was the well-known brand of crisp that I basically went to their website, had a look at what they did, and then it's basically stuff like, for example, a condiment often used as an ingredient in Bloody Marys, and then they get the flavour of crisp from that, and also for a bonus point, get the colour of the packaging for this particular.
Yeah, so it's Worcester sauce.
Yeah, very good.
And the packaging for Worcester sauce, and it's Walkers, right?
It is Walkers, yeah. I wasn't sure if we could do product placement on here.
Oh, yeah, we're not the biggest mate. We can do what we like. I love Gary Lineker and I love Walkers. Can I just say, I mean, this not being the BBC, if Walkers want to send us some crisps, 100% up for that.
If Walkers want to send us Gary Lineker for an episode.
Yes, that would be great.
I mean, we can't afford to pay him, but Walkers, that'd be wonderful.
And Jonathan, it sounds like your quiz should be sponsored by them. Is the Worcester sauce, is it a sort of brown? Is it like
it's purple, mate. Come on.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Come on. I've spent too long hanging around in news agents just loitering, trying to work out what to spend me 50p on.
Would you include Walker's Sensations, Jonathan, or is it just purely the original?
You know what? I had to draw the line somewhere.
Those middle class potato snacks.
Yeah, <none of that. laughs>
Well, the Walker's Sensations, poppadoms, coriander, and lime. I mean, they've changed the face of crisps for me, I'll be honest.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Really good.
Anyway, we're not getting paid by them. We should stop that. And the dances, what? I mean, obviously we can't see you, so there's no point asking you to recreate that. But what was your favourite of the dances?
I think probably the Charleston. I think that was... it took me a few goes to get it right, actually. My hands were...
I wasn't expecting that. I was thinking it was going to be a Macarena or something. But wow, actual proper dances. I think that is a remarkable dedication to quiz mastery.
Well, yeah, strictly beckons for you, Jonathan, at some point.
I was trying it as the kind of precursor to Lucy's cakey dance off.
Yes.
We've not talked about Cakey Dance Off for too long. Thank you for bringing that
back. Still on the back burner.
If Gary Lineker wants to host it, I'm prepared to hand it over. That's all I'm saying. You can have that format. Oh, Jonathan, well, I really would love to come to one of your quizzes. It sounds like the most fun and yet statistically challenging. I mean, it's like fun with stats. It's the best kind of fun.
And that's true quizzer there. True quizzes. There's got to be someone keeping not just scores, but stats. A spreadsheet is occurring.
And now, Jonathan, our producer Amanda told us, she was talking to you about your areas of expertise.
Yeah.
And I feel you have treated us. You've given us such a lovely glimpse into your quizzing. I wanted to treat you with a quiz. And will you tell the ladies and gentlemen what your area of expertise is?
It used to be Formula One, and hopefully it still might be.
Now, this brings us, Jonathan, to an interesting thing. We've been talking a lot to you about question setting and about how difficult that is. And I tell you what makes it incredibly difficult to set questions is if you absolutely can't stand the thing you're setting questions about. Because I have as much interest in Formula One as I do in, and I can't actually think of anything else that I have less interest in. And I'm sorry, I'm sure lots of people find it very entertaining, but it's passed me by in quite some huge way. So I've
very
tried...
fast, it goes by very fast.
Well, it does. It does. I blinked and I missed it and I didn't care. So I've tried, Jonathan, to construct three questions about Formula One. But this will be a good little workshop because often, obviously, as a quiz setter, you have to set questions about stuff you don't know about. Yep. So we can workshop these questions and see where I've gone right or where I've gone wrong. So question number one I was going to ask you, I'm going to the classic era of Formula One.
Okay.
And the question I've written here is, during his career, James Hunt drove for three teams. Can you name any two of those three teams?
McLaren. He won his world title with them. I think, I saw the film, he drove for BR. No, he didn't. That was Lauda. I think he drove for Ensign later on.
No. Well, you see, I say that. Basically, what I've done is I've gone to Wikipedia and I've looked up James Hunt because I thought, well, that would be interesting. And it said in Wikipedia, which again, you know, rookie error number one, don't trust Wikipedia. But the teams that were listed were Hesketh. He started off at Hesketh.
He did start with Hesketh.
And then Hesketh, who don't exist anymore, obviously. And then McLaren. And then finally, Wolf.
Wolf. I knew it.
Now, is that a question that makes sense, Jonathan? Is it a good question or not? You can be honest.
I would give that question a solid 9 out of 10.
High praise indeed.
It was bad answering, but good questioning.
Okay, so that was acceptable, was it?
Oh yeah, very much.
I mean, obviously I shouldn't have trusted Wikipedia. I mean, Jenny would be, you'd be
not horrified. not as a single source. But I think if you don't want to actually have to delve in at this level, I think it's generally going to be accurate about your big guns, about the headline facts.
And it gives you an idea, and then you would see what I would have done had I more time, obviously, is that I would then have gone and sort of verified all of those things. And the reason that, you know, it gave me pause as well, Jonathan, was because, you know, because I know nothing, like Wolf could have been a branch of whatever the thing was that you said. Or
the Gladiator.
Now that I am interested in, if it was questions about gladiators, I would have had. And now look, here's a good. This is an example of a question that I've tried to set that I think is flawed. So, what was the first Formula One race, Jonathan?
The very first Formula One race. It was in 1950, and it was. I'm going to go for the Italian Monza.
Right, now, I'll tell you, your 1950 is sort of correct, right? The first World Championship Formula One race took place at Silverstone in 1950.
Ah.
But the first Formula One race was the 1946 Turin Grand Prix. So you said Italy, but you said, so basically that is an example of, if you don't know about a subject, then it's very hard to... For me, I'm like, do we mean the first Formula One race, the first World Championship? I don't understand.
You don't know the actual terminology, that's the common parlance. Yeah.
What would you say, Jonathan, would be, how would you word that question to make a correct answer?
I did take it to be the first World Championship race, which started in 1950. So, yeah, I would just say where was the first Formula One World Championship race held? And I'd say it's bad answering. it's not,
I feel like there's fault on both sides here, Jonathan, let's just put it that way. I'll give you one final question, and this one I'm pretty confident with, okay. So the question is, which Formula One racing driver said this? I do a lot of things with my driving style, which is very nice to the car. I actually talk to it a lot during the race. I massage it. I wouldn't call it foreplay, but it's something like that.
Wow.
And it's...
Wow.
It's a current Formula One driver.
It sounds, from the quote, it sounds a little bit Daniel Ricciardo.
It is totally Daniel Ricciardo. There you go.
Great answer.
Daniel Ricciardo, of course, an Italian-Australian driver. He's currently at Renault, did you know that, Jenny? But he's, I think he's joining McLaren next season.
Wow. From the quote, if you hadn't told me it was a Formula One driver, I would have probably said, like, David Hasselhoff in Knight Rider.
But he is a big
foreplay with the car.
So there you go, you're him and
yeah.
So well done, I have to say, Jonathan, you absolutely showed that you knew what you were talking about, even when the question master didn't. So congratulations.
He showed you class.
And I think you're going to come back later on and give us a quiz. Is that correct?
That is absolutely right.
We are honoured and thrilled to be joined by the wonderful Kiri Pritchard-McLean. Hello, Kiri.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is such a pleasure and a dream. So we have got a couple of quizzes for you because obviously everyone will know you from presenting News Jack on Radio 4 Extra, from doing the All Killer No Filler podcast, which is one of our absolute favourites, Jen, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Absolutely glued to it. I even suffered through all those episodes of The Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh my God, 6 hours.
It was an ordeal.
It was. And also, I don't know why I thought during a global pandemic that it would be a good idea to have a jaunty 6-hour trip through one of those horrific crimes that's ever been. But about 3 hours in,
the national mood. I think that was what we did, actually.
Absolutely.
And Jenny has, in fact, provided, because what we like to do, Kiri, is we do like to quiz our guests by way of an interview about your life, really. We sort of do it in the medium of quiz. Jenny has prepared what I think is one of the finest quizzes she has ever written on the subject of, well, it's sort of about serial killers and more, Jenny, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought, what does Kiri like? She likes true crime and she likes animals. She loves her pets. So it's about killers and pets.
Okay, got
it. Oh, she looks excited now. There is no pressure to get these right, but I'm sure you're going to get at least 3 out of 5, like, without thinking.
Okay.
So we'll start off nice and easy. What was the name of Myra Hindley's beloved dog?
Puppet.
Correct. See, straight out of the tracks there.
This is somebody who knows her stuff.
Which serial killer took exception to being dubbed the animal-loving killer by a newspaper after taking steps to ensure the welfare of his first victim's 2 dogs? He proved his point by incorporating the killing of a cat into a later murder.
I mean, that is cold.
Yeah.
Not bad enough being a murderer.
It's like, oh, I didn't phone the Samaritans to tell them about the dogs. I was telling them about the corpse to show off about my murder.
It just shows you, doesn't it, when you hear something like that, you're like, of course he's a man. Like if you'd read it out with no gender, you'd be like, well, that's obviously a gentleman. I didn't know that a newspaper had dubbed them, but there's something familiar about someone rescuing the animals, but I can't remember who it is. I'm so sorry.
I can tell you that this was in London in the 90s.
Not Colin Island?
Correct, yes.
Great.
Yes. His first known victim, he put the German Shepherd and the Labrador into the kitchen, I think, and they were locked in for a couple of days. And when the murder hadn't been in the papers, he then called the Samaritans to say, there's 2 dogs locked in a kitchen in Battersea. So the papers went, he must love animals. Like, I don't love animals. And then he killed someone's cat.
And posed them on the body. Yeah.
Yeah. That. Yeah. If you're having any kind of meal right now, don't Google that.
So those of you who have tuned in for our regular jaunty quiz-based fun, there is a slightly darker tone to today's show. We might have to do a PSA at the top.
Yes, this is what happens whenever I record anything. It always ends up at some point they go, we should tell people they can't eat their food while Kiri's on this podcast. That's a common theme.
Well, I did a couple of weeks ago, I did No Such Thing as a Fish, and I think that's the first time they've ever had to have a disclaimer about that because of my topic. There's such a thing, a historical thing called sootykins, and if you wish to Google that, do not eat at the same time.
Ooh,
it's to do with feminine hygiene.
Oh,
my favourite topic.
There we go. Well, that's the next quiz, Kiri. No, it's not. Breed of dog was Bleep?
It was a collie.
Yeah, it was a border collie.
And shall we explain who Bleep was for our listeners?
They should already know. It's clearly David Tennant's dog.
What did you think of the Des with David Tennant, which, of course, I haven't actually watched it yet, to be honest. I've just read so much about it, I feel I don't have to.
I thought there were some absolutely brilliant performances in it, and I'm always heartened when I see true crime moving away from being sensationalist hero worship towards something with some level of empathy towards the victims. So mm-hmm. I think it's a positive in that case. And yeah, I guess it's, but then you always worry that it's going to reignite, I can't believe I'm saying this, reignite a sort of weirdos to be very into. I can't believe I'm throwing shade at other people for being into true crime, but I think there's a, I think there's a one way to appreciate it, there's quite an unsavoury way. So I worry that it's going to sort of encourage those lot. But yeah,
I mean, they don't take much encouragement, do they? Really?
No, and oh, I could always use some more podcast listeners, so I don't know why I'm moaning really.
No, it's, I think there's a bit of a line because the show Des, they made it very, very much focused on the aftermath and the investigator mm-hmm. and Brian Masters, who is writing the book about Nilsson, and it's very unsympathetic. But my mum turned to me during the first episode, she went, David Tennant's still too sexy. Like, okay, mum. But, you know, she's like, I think it's still glamorising him. So, but there will still be people who... Yeah,
look at what Benedict Cumberbatch did for Dominic Cummings. You know, I mean, it is a, yes. a danger.
Something involving pets. Yeah, grim.
Kerry's 2 for 2 there so far. On the, no, 3. 3. 3.
3 for 3. Nice.
3, well done.
Okay, 2 more to go in this round. Which serial killer stated that the one thing he missed in prison was his aquarium? His tropical fish collection wasn't the most unusual thing the police discovered in his apartment.
I'm going to guess Jeffrey Dahmer because I know that when the police brought a victim of his back to his flat that had escaped, they said, "What's that smell?" And he said, "It's the fish." So that's my guess.
Yes, correct. Very good. Wow, this very is good knowledge.
Showing, isn't
it? This is really, really damning.
Well, those are serial killers. This one isn't about a serial killing. This is about a single killing. So maybe this will throw you off your... No, okay. Probably not. What sort of pet led to Doug Beamish being convicted of the 1994 murder of his ex-wife? It was the first murder conviction based on non-human DNA.
I know that there's a dog that's been a witness in a trial, but I don't know anything about Doug Beamish. Is that his name? Doug Beamish?
Doug Beamish, yeah. He was in Canada, Prince Edward Island, and he killed his ex-wife, Shirley Ann Dugay.
Oh, should I guess a Canadian animal then? Like a bear?
It's got to be a bear.
It's a moose.
Not his pet moose. No. So Doug Beamish had a pet cat called Snowball, had very distinctive white fur, and the key bit of evidence was a bloody jacket, which was soaked in his wife's blood, but also had a selection of distinctive white furs on there. And I think it was his parents' cat, who he was living with his parents at the time. So it'd be nice to think that the cat was like, I know what you're up to, Doug. You're not going to get away with it on my watch. And was like rubbing up against him. He's like, why is the cat so friendly? And yes, he was absolutely nailing you for murder, Doug.
Oh, see, this there is the go. Thing. A dog will like take it to the grave, but a cat will absolutely shop you in if it thinks it can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am now going to be pitching a series about a cat detective on the basis of this one story.
Played by Justin Edwards.
Played by my husband.
Off mic, we were talking about his wonderful cat impersonation.
Yeah, it's a role he was born to play. It was. You know, not... Tennant Cumberbatch, you can absolutely go to hell. It's my husband's role. It's Snowball the cat detective.
Perfect.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, that was amazing. That's one of the strongest showings we've ever had. Congratulations, Kiri.
Thank you.
Well, we should ask you, Kiri, are you a fan of the quiz? Have you got any interest in quizzing?
Yes, but I'm really... Quizzes, for me, I love them and I really admire them, but I'm really quite thick. And I think because of having sort of like a nondescript accent and had two surnames, I've really got away with it so far. But then when you do a quiz, it just shows everything up, doesn't it? So I remember being obsessed with quizzes when I was a kid, the ones on telly. There was one that was called 50-50. I don't know if you remember this when we were growing up. And it was basically 50 kids from one primary school and 50 kids from another, and they would sort of like, they would answer the questions, and then whichever team won would then put their kids in an actual, like, you know, in a competition bit. And so I've explained that very poorly. But basically the thing that I was so sad about is because I went to a normal secondary school, but my primary school was private, and there was probably about 40 children in the whole school. So I knew deep down that I would never be able to do 50-50 because there would have to be like, there just wasn't 50 kids in my year. That is the most like, first world problem to moan about. Like, actually, there wasn't enough children in my private school to be eligible for the television programme. But I remember just being like, I'd love to be on that, doing a quiz. So yeah, I was a big fan of them growing up. And then just as I've got older, I get too into them. So I have to not watch them because I get really quite angry. And also I'm that person who will silently watch and not be able to answer about 9 of them, and then sort of like arrogantly go, oh, was it that? Yeah, well, actually, that's sulfur, for the one thing that I do know, and then pretend I haven't listened to the others. It's so awful. My ego just can't take it.
Well, but you are a comedian, so, I mean, let's face it, all ego-based sort of folly is excused in the comedian. But, well, now listen, and I'm going to say you are doing yourself down and saying, oh, no, I'm rubbish, because you have actually quizzed on television, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, my Rachel Fairburn, who I co-host the Orkula No Filler podcast with, we went on Pointless Celebrities and on like a double act special. And so it was... amazing people, like Cannon and Ball were on there. Cannon and Ball. No, is that the right one? Rock on Tommy.
That's Cannon and Ball. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sometimes I get the 80s, 90s double X confused, and I was thinking, is that Hale and Pace? No, Cannon and Ball were on.
Come to me, that's my area of expertise. So,
Gloria Hunniford and Angela Rippon was another team. Yeah, no. And then Rachel and I, and so it was really amazing, got to meet obviously fantastic people, and Rachel was really good at it because she's quite calm, whereas I just go blank, it's because I've got attention deficit disorder as well, very easily distracted in quite a stimulating television studio.
Interesting. I found that when I did it, because you're like, you've got Richard, you've got Xander, you're looking all over the place. And so talk us through how you did. What round did you get to?
I don't even know. I think we were quicked off quite early. Cannonball went first time. They went immediately, which apparently is what they do every time they're on it.
They're just there for the laughs, aren't they? They're just there to have a laugh.
Absolutely. And so was I, in a way. I got us kicked off the show because they asked a question that was, name a word that ends in AR. And I was like, so I answered with porn star. And I had like mortar in my head, but I was like, oh, but that's not the funny answer, is it? Like, the funny answer if you're a comedian is to say porn star.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they went and deliberated for ages. And it was up with a gallery. And I was like, I've got another one if you want. And they were like, oh no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. So I was like, oh great, can't wait to get a pointless answer with this. And then it wasn't an answer because apparently porn star isn't in the dictionary, and I was absolutely furious.
Wow.
I was so angry because I was like, well, you know, I had another one. So they so we kicked off Tea Time Television by saying the word porn star while they all, with a very straight face, tried to pretend they'd never heard of the word.
Yeah, so in the edit, I presume it was a very quick interaction. What had actually taken hours in the studio.
Yeah, it genuinely took about 20 minutes of them going away and Googling, and like, because obviously when you're Googling porn star, it's not the first thing that comes up isn't the Oxford Dictionary definition, is it? So I imagine they were getting past all kinds of sort of like safety parent guideline blockers on the internet. But yeah, I was
maybe they've all got ADD and we're just getting distracted as well. I mean, you wouldn't even need ADD to be distracted.
No. Yeah, so I felt really bad because Rachel is so great at that stuff, and I honestly think that we could have got very, very far had it not been for me being just trying to play the fool. I feel really bad about it. She was great about it. She didn't care. She was like, no, it's funny, it's a funny reason to get kicked off. But also, yes, you worry about your charities as well. You're like, oh, I could have made money for the charity if I wasn't trying to show off. Why have I not learned anything from my school reports?
As we've said though in the past, actually the charities love the exposure and the awareness raising and all of that stuff, so it is, you do a good thing, and by, you know, being memorable, you may well have secured more donations for them. People might have gone, I like that porn star girl, I like the cut of her jib, I think I'm gonna go and give some money to that charity.
Or it'll be like this podcast and I'll have to put a warning out and go, don't eat while this woman's on screen.
Don't Google anything she says.
I think that's pretty cool, having that as your warning. I did prepare. I prepared a couple of questions for you, Kiri, which are related to both crime and quiz.
Okay.
But I think you'll know these. I'm pretty confident. What was the name of the Welsh serial killer who appeared on Bullseye in 1989?
Yeah. Oh, is he? I think there's only one Welsh serial killer. Is it Peter Moore?
No, that's not the name I have. Unless he went under an alias. I'll be honest, I didn't research it terribly well. It's John Cooper.
Oh, yeah, no, that is right. That is right, yeah.
Yes.
And I remember that because there's a comedian called John Cooper.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, I shouldn't have known that. There's another, yeah, because I thought there was only one Welsh serial killer, but there must be two because there's one from my area who owned a cinema near me, and then, yeah, John Cooper as well.
Oh, come on, Wales.
I know.
Serial killers. We're letting the side down.
No, it just means we don't get caught.
Yes, there's a lot of Wales where you can hide things, isn't there? In fact, that was the really chilling thing when John Cooper was on Bullseye. So it was in the middle, you know, he had already killed. And Jim Bowen was talking to him about all the lovely scenery of Pembrokeshire. And, you know, what an amazing place, how you can just get lost in it, I think was what he said. And
have you seen Rodney Alcala? He's known as the dating game killer. And he was on there basically like the American blind date. Yeah. He won as well. He got selected. And the woman was like, I'm not going. When she met him, she was like, I get really bad vibes. And he killed a load of women by this point. And she was like, she never went on the date with him. But like when you watch it back now, his answers, which are just as cringy as anyone else who's been on a show like that. But you're like, oh, you can tell because he says he likes going out at night. You can absolutely tell. Yeah. But he's just being a professional creep like everyone else who does that program.
Yes. In fact, if you told me that anyone who'd been on Blind Date had turned into a serial killer, including Amanda Holden, I would completely... well, see, that was going to be my second question, but you've preempted it, you see. So
I'm
this
sorry.
Is how deep your knowledge is. No,
I apologise. No, I think you get extra points in Quiz World for predicting future questions. You're given a theme and you go, well, this is definitely going to come up. There you go. You
right.
know your subject area.
And the third question I had for you, which is the grinder killer Stephen Port briefly appeared on an episode of which popular television show in 2014?
I didn't know God. This. This is very good.
Mm. Is it the news?
Well, almost certainly. I think on a technicality, we will have to give that to you because I think that was the year he was caught as well. So the correct answer was MasterChef.
What?
Professional chef. And he wasn't a contestant on MasterChef, but he was in a scene where they were serving food to the homeless. So he was there serving food to the homeless all the while.
Scoping for victims.
So there you go. So that was your little quiz on which combines our worlds of television and murder. I did have another quiz for you, and this relates to your current position as the host of Newsjack, which is one of the finest British institutions in that it helps so many writers into comedy writing and is just, I think it's just such a good topical show. And one of the very few places where you hear proper sort of sketchy stuff as well.
Yeah, I think it's excellent. I'm really proud to be part of the legacy of it, I guess, because it is where so it can feel like such a dark art when you do comedy, especially as like I went to a crap uni. I didn't go to, you know, Oxford or Cambridge, where I guess there's someone you can ask about that world or you see the path going into it. So having something like Newsjack that's just like open submission, BBC, they pay you. And, you know, if you do well, they get you into the writer's room. It's just amazing. And there's no other organisation except the BBC that would basically throw money down that hole. Because it's not, you know, they don't get... It's a very expensive show to make because it requires so many people to make it happen because it gets turned around in a few days. So, yeah, I think it's really, really excellent. I'm so proud to have been, the host of it.
Yeah, I do think because there is no commercial advantage to doing it, and people always sneer about the BBC being elitist, and you go, yeah, but they are actually helping people like you and I, who are like, I didn't know anyone who'd ever done any comedy, I had no idea how to get into comedy, and they do encourage people. So, and it's also a very funny show, we should say that it is you know, it is hilarious. So because you are the host of Newsjack, Kiri, I have done a Newsjack quiz, which is about people called Jack who are currently in the news.
Okay, great.
That was how I decided to try, you know, you just have to try and do something a bit different. So I've got three questions for you about Jacks who are in the news. After being pictured with a ring on her wedding finger this week, you know how the papers always do this, oh, someone's been pictured with a ring on their wedding finger. It must mean they're about to get mad, and, you know.
Or not that the photo's been reversed, which I keep getting.
Oh, do
you? I wear
you?
A ring on my right hand, and it will get in the papers, like, oh, Jenny Ryan engagement, like. Nope, just your photo department, lads.
After being pictured with a ring on her wedding finger this week, model Roxy Horner is rumoured to be engaged to which famous Jack? It's the kind of thing you might get this in a pub quiz, in a sort of in the news thing. I felt like these sort of tabloid rumoury things do sometimes come up, don't they, Jem?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they do. It's a pub quiz kind of staple to keep things so fresh. As well, that it's basically rumours they'll put in there. Keep you on your toes. Have you read the paper up to page 9 in the last 2 days?
I genuinely can only think of one famous Jack, and I know that they haven't been romantically linked to this person I've never heard of, because they are... Because I think it would have been on their Instagram, which I was looking at yesterday for recipes. So it's not Jack Munro.
No, that's a good shout, though. That's a good shout.
No idea. I'm so sorry.
It is the 32-year-old comedian. I only know he's 32 because it was in this story. Jack Whitehall.
Oh, Jack Whitehall.
32. I thought he was older than that.
Well, tabloid age, 30.
Tabloid age, yeah. Stage age.
He was very young when he started, because I remember doing a gig with him when he first started, and he was a tiny child. tiny posh child. So anyway, that's Roxy Horner.
Wow.
That was Leonardo DiCaprio, so quite frankly, she deserves happiness as well.
It's a hell of a name as well.
Yes.
I'm assuming she's changed her name to Roxy Horner for modelling purposes. That is a showbiz name through and through.
It's so brilliant showbiz.
It's brilliant. Like it's slightly porn starry as well, though.
Or like a 1920s musical, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good name whichever way you slice it, quite frankly.
Strong.
Your next Jack question is, which Pulitzer Prize winning writer this week released Jack, the fourth novel in a sequence she began with the book Gilead in 2004? Now, this would be very likely to come up in a quiz. I will be honest with you, I would not have known her name except that she was on the radio this morning.
I have no idea.
I think this is very, very difficult.
The correct answer is Marilyn Robinson, which, as I say, I wouldn't have got that until after this morning.
But it is a news Jack.
Yes, love it.
There you go.
The News Jack. And your final News Jack is Love Island's Jack Fincham was featured in the tabloids this week because he has renounced his partying ways and taken up which sport? And this is the kind of question where it's always worth a guess.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I presume you haven't read this story. It was in the Daily Star.
Never seen an episode of Love Island. And I didn't manage to leaf through the Daily Star before we started this. let's have a think. What sport has he taken up? Judo.
Oh, you are very close. It's a combat sport.
It's not karate, is it? Oh, boxing.
That was me. I was trying to do a boxing mime and it was one of the most beautiful things.
It was lovely that your tongue was fully out your mouth as well when you were doing it.
I was getting flashbacks then to our first live show.
Oh, God, yes. There was
boxing involved.
We had to blow up animals because of Nick Helm for some reason. I don't know. I was very young at the time. I can't really remember.
It seemed like a great idea back at the beginning of this year. And who knew it would be one of the less surreal things to happen.
Oh, that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done, Kiri.
It's terrible.
Well, but you see, this is what I always find is those in the news rounds on pub quizzes are the absolute worst. Because who actually these days, who really kind of, you know, the broad sweep of news and the awfulness, but who actually wants to engage with the news on any kind of intricate or meaningful level? Certainly not me.
what a uplifting sign off.
Wow. Rest all of us now, haven't I? But anyway. But if you like the funny side of the news, you can listen to it. How many more News Jacks are there in this series, Kim?
So we're just about to record episode 2. So, yeah, there'll be 4 more after that. It is brilliant. And please do submit because you've got nothing to lose except your time. But then even then, I would see it as like when you're writing for something, it's like being in the gym for being a comedian. You get like, you get fitter and better at it without even realising. So, yeah, do submit. That's the main thing, because I think you'll get a lot out of it. And obviously hearing your name read out on the radio as a contributor is absolutely brilliant.
It is. It never stops being a thrill. And what else are you up to?
What else am I up to?
You're the landlady of the COVID arms. Is that still...
Yes, still doing that. I was doing that once a month.
You've raised phenomenal amounts of money, haven't you, with that?
Yeah, between the pub quiz, thank you very much for doing that, Jenny, and whoop, the regular comedy night, I think we're heading for £150,000 for charity.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing.
Well, that more than makes up for your appearance on Pointless. You've done your thing now. That's fine.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really proud of it, and we're doing it monthly now. We're doing it every week of lockdown for sort of 15 weeks, and then we've gone monthly now. And it's just a really nice thing. There's a really nice community, because you also realise doing it that there were so many people who loved live comedy who, for whatever reasons, whereas it's sort of like mental health or mobility or access or finance, weren't able to go and see live comedy that they absolutely loved. And hopefully now we've given people away, and it's just a really nice atmosphere. I'm really proud of it and what it's become.
It's fantastic. Well, people can find that online. But I mean, nowadays you just go search for all the stuff. News Jack.
Yeah, just search for it. Google porn star and you'll find it all.
Thank you very much, Kiri, for joining us. It's been such an absolute pleasure. Everyone can go back to eating now. We've stopped talking about murder. And also, yeah, do listen to All Killer No Filler, because it is one of the absolute finest podcasts out there. Thank you very much, Kiri, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We are now going to have our listener quiz.
Listener quiz.
And it's a listener and a talker. It's someone who we've spoken to already today. It is the wonderful Jonathan Hopper.
Hello.
Welcome back, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Thank you. This was one of my themed rounds in the Zoom quiz, and it's all about famous animals.
Oh, fabulous.
What I'm going to do is the following 5 animals, they all hit the news headlines some point over the past 80 or so years. I'm going to give you the name of the animal, the location that they're most associated with, and also the year that they're most associated with. And what you have to do is get the type of animal and what they're famous for.
Brilliant. I love this. Okay, fire away.
Okay, number 1, an animal called Pickles, and he was from London, 1956. I think you've already gotten this.
Yeah, the minute you had us at Pickles. This was the dog that stole the World Cup. Is that
he found the World Cup? No, the World Cup was stolen, and I think he found it. It was South East London. It was like Forest Hill Way,
somewhere like that.
I think it's where the Sainsbury's is, near Forest Hill Station, is where the World Cup was found. If I'm right, Dave Lee will correct me. Friend of the show, Dave Lee, once pointed at a Sainsbury's and said something about pickles, which I thought was absolutely marvellous. Yeah, I love that. And that's actually quite meta in quiz terms, because if you've ever seen Early Doors, they have the episode where they have a pub quiz, and some of the participants have asked for only one thing from the quiz, and that is a question about Pickles the dog. Which they get. They make them wait most of the way through the quiz. They get very excited. That's one of the most authentic representations of a pub quiz in any form of fiction.
Absolutely. I love Early Doors. Okay, question two. Two animals. They were called Butch and Sundance, also known as the Tamworth Two, and they were best known for being in Malmesbury in Wiltshire, year 1998.
They were the runaway pigs, weren't they?
Yes.
They escaped from slaughter. The Tamworth Two.
Absolutely.
Oh, bless them.
It might get harder from here. Question number three. The name of the animal is Coco. She was born in San Francisco Zoo. She was actually better known for being somewhere else, but if I give you that, it gives the animal away. And her heyday really was the 1980s, late 1970s.
Oh, so now Coco, she was famous for being somewhere else, but if you told us that would give it away, does that, it sort of implies that might be in the name of the place, maybe?
The animal, type of animal is in the name of the place.
Yes, like Monkey World or...
Sea World.
Lucy's close.
Is she a primate?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So Coco, and it was the 80s. Well, was she, now I'm going to say, a gorilla who learned sign language?
You've got it. That's right. She was a gorilla. She was taught a version of American sign language. She had a vocab of over 1,000 words, and she went on, this is the best bit, she went on to befriend Robin Williams.
I've seen the video. It's wonderful. Honestly, if anybody's feeling down, get on YouTube and Google Robin Williams Gorilla.
Yeah.
And it's an uplifting and joyful compilation video there of the times you met Coco. So I'll come back to me now, but well done, Lucy. You got there so much faster than I.
Absolutely. Question number four. This poor animal was called Albert Two. He didn't even have his own name. From the United States in 1949. Albert Two.
Now, 1949, what was going on? So, post-war... It could be something to do with... Was that when they discovered smoking was bad? He was like a smoking beagle or something?
Oh! No, poor Albert!
He was a kind of pioneer in something else. He was kind of used...
Space.
Yes, very good.
Was he a sea monkey? They did send sea monkeys into space. So Albert was something that got sent into space, a mouse or a rat.
A bit bigger than that.
Chimp.
A bit smaller than a chimp.
A rhesus monkey.
Yes, rhesus.
Nice. Because they kind of worked their way up in size of what they were sending in these vehicles. Didn't they have spiders at one point, just to see how the pressure would affect them, and then work their way up to
higher. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I know they at one stage sent some fruit flies up, so I don't know what they could tell them about anything.
if they came back alive, then it was probably a fairly good sign. I don't know. I don't know what they were trying to test out.
I hope the spiders didn't, escape. It'd be awful for me we repopulate. You know, eventually we have to leave this dying planet, and we go and live on. You know, they manage to make Mars habitable or whatever, and we get there and it's full of the spiders from Mars.
Yeah,
that would be awful.
Face spiders.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Very good question, that one, Jonathan. Have we got one more?
And one more. Three of them is a trio. They were called White Vision, Winky and Tyke. They're from the UK and they reached their height of fame in 1943.
1943.
So these are war animals.
They are.
Yeah,
war.
They look like pigeons?
They are pigeons. Excellent.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, very good. Well, it's the Dickin Medal, isn't it?
It's the Dickin Medal.
Yeah, there was a lot of war animals, weren't there? I think only one cat has ever won the Dickin Medal. Come on.
Well, there was a story this week about a rat in Cambodia who I think may have won the Dickin Medal or something similar. But there's it's a mine detecting rat and it scampers about it. No, it was Cambodia. Sorry, it was Cambodia. Yeah. There was a
wonderful
this little rat in Cambodia that runs around and it's amazing, isn't that amazing? Do you know what you've done there, Jonathan? Brilliant quiz.
Thank you.
And also such an uplifting subject.
Well, I thought so. I mean, crisps and famous animals and dancing.
These are all my favourite things, Jonathan. If I could dance with a gorilla while eating crisps, Worcester sauce flavour in particular, I'd be the happiest girl on the planet. I really would. On any planet, whatever planet we were on. That's been lovely. Thank you so much, Jonathan.
You're welcome.
It has been a delight and a joy to have you on the show today. And keep on quizzing. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's the end of the show. Wasn't it a treat? I absolutely loved both our guests today, Jenny.
I'm so sad it's over. I really am.
I mean, it was very animal heavy, it turns out, in the end.
Yeah, and completely by coincidence. We had animals that have changed the world and also animals that have seen things that, you know, no cat ought to have seen.
we've given this episode a theme without even intending to.
I know. But we've had such lovely guests as well. At least that's cheered us up, even if the subject matter hasn't always been the most cheerful. So I want to say thanks to Kiri Pritchard-McLean for just absolutely smashing that slightly sinister quiz that I wrote her.
And the lovely Jonathan Hopper for not only making me briefly care about Formula One, but also for suggesting great new ways to quiz and reminding us about hero animals.
Brilliant. And I think there's got to be other people who sort of pioneered more Zoom quiz methods. So I think we should be asking people to get in touch with us. If you've come up with a new way of quizzing, if you've cracked the code of quiz during lockdown, we want to know all about it.
Please do let us know. Yes, I'm now off to watch Robin Williams and Coco the Gorilla and eat some Worcester sauce flavoured crisps. I'm going to have to go to the shops, but I am going to go because I really fancy some now.
Same. I'm doing exactly the same as you.
All right, lovely. Well, you guys do that as well. And thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time on Fingers
on Buzzers.
Lovely.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz at fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet at fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.